Welcome to the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast, where we explore family offices, real estate, and the art of preserving legacies and wealth. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and I'm going to be utilizing my experience of investing on behalf of a number of prominent families and working directly for a number of prominent families on their real estate portfolio. I'm going to tap into my decades worth of experience in real estate investing and relationships with some of the most prominent family office leaders in the industry, academics from universities around the world, and industry experts and leaders in the real estate space. So whether you're a family member, family office executive, family office, or real estate enthusiast, Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast will empower you with knowledge and influential voices. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and this is the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Family Office Real Estate Insights. Today, we're going to focus in on properties that you may have as being from your family, yourself, or maybe you built a platform where you have real estate, where you focus and you have some people internally that are working on some of the projects. And today we have David Stanford with Real Foundations. David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be on the show with you and talk about this.
So tell me, I want to give the audience a little bit of background, which will give a good foundation for these questions that I want to go over. So give me a little background on Real Foundations, who you work with, type of things that you guys do, and solutions that you help.
Okay. I'll start with a little bit of background on my journey quickly. So seeing your actual background behind you in the mountains, I started my career as a fly fishing guide in Montana after college. And that was right after the 86 Tax Act. And I had a standing offer with Kenneth Leventhal and Company, an accounting firm that just worked with real estate. So I learned my passion for real estate at Kenneth Leventhal and learned a lot during the aftermath of the Tax Act, Savings and Loan Crisis, RTC, the rebirth of the REIT market. Mm-hmm. And during that time period, we started to build what we called a management consulting practice, not a capital advisory practice. And we started helping these larger and larger real estate companies who were accepting institutional capital. Mm-hmm. We started helping them run their operations better. And that's what we've been doing for the past 30 plus years. So at RF, pretty simple mission. We help real estate companies run better. And that's pretty broad, from kind of developers to residential provider, basically where you sleep, income producing owner operators, service providers, capital providers, and then lastly, corporate occupiers. So a pretty wide gamut of the built environment. And we're a fairly simple business. We do project work to kind of help somebody run their business better. And we have a managed services business that sometimes takes on services from our clients. So we can get into more detail about what all that actually means in the future.
So, and just as a side note, you brought up about the fly fishing. You know, we're going to be doing some events here in Colorado, and fly fishing is going to be one of them. So we'll have to definitely get you
involved. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Especially for those people that haven't gone fly fishing before, and there's some good streams here and whatnot. So you, I'm sure you deal with different sizes of real estate companies, right?
Yes.
So let's focus a little bit first off on the smaller sizes, right? Mm-hmm. Or because one of the greatest areas of wealth, and especially after
if a family created their wealth in a different area, chemicals, tires, whatever, the second greatest area of wealth creation is real estate, right? And then you also have those people that made their money in real estate. And many of those, they start as family businesses, right? And so you don't necessarily have that infrastructure in place. But as you get bigger, you really do need to start institutionalizing. So if we focus on, you know, the family business that's growing or starting out with, you know, you've got a smaller company, what are a lot of the mistakes that you see? And are they, I would imagine they're pretty common, or you see some of the main issues that come up over and over?
Well, so just frame this a little bit about kind of our point of view, where we're coming from. So we're all about sort of how a company operates and executes its business day to day, sort of across the enterprise. And that really focuses on the operating model, the operating platform. And so we're not trying to help people get capital or buy assets or any of that, but just, you know, how you operate.
Yep.
And so many times we get called in when something is wrong, something doesn't feel right. It's kind of like going to the doctor and getting a diagnosis. It's like, hey, producing results like I believe that we should. We're usually hired by principal. And can you come in and take a look and diagnose X or Y? There's sort of a wide variety of solutions. And a lot of times what we see with smaller clients that are sort of struggling with this is the desire to simply solve things with some magic technology from an operations standpoint. So we'll go buy X system or Y system or this prop tech thing, or this chat GPT is going to change everything we do. We'll put that in, we'll be good. Well, typically it doesn't work like that. And then what happens a lot is you get multiples of technologies together. They're not talking to each other. Then you have this infrastructure you got to like deal with, care for, feed, and it becomes pretty complex and disjointed. We see that quite often, and we're called in to kind of help diagnose that and figure out sort of what the core ailment is, and basically put a plan in place to get it back. And that's very, very specific. Based on the asset class, sometimes geography, and also type of capital the companies have, the patience of that capital, the risk appetite of that capital, the demands of that capital from a transparency standpoint. And it's interesting that we in the private equity or fund space, we usually get called in around fund three. It's like uncanny. So fund one was kind of friends and family.
Yep.
Fund two for 150 million. Fund two, maybe we raised $400 million, and maybe had a few private endowment or private university endowments or something like that. Then fund three, we're going big, and now we're having to talk to all the investment consultants and convince them. And go into sort of highly sophisticated institutional capital. Yep. And they have a lot more demands, very specific demands on how they will be treated, interacted with, reported to, what their expectations of governance are, et cetera, et cetera. And that's usually like a step change in the operating model requirements on a real estate investment platform.
Well, that's the checks and balances, really making sure that those are all put in place. What about on a personnel side? So we touch on the technology component and, you know, even with a couple of families I've worked for, you know, one was pretty new to the space, ended up building out a new platform, had some unique vernacular, actually sort of learning the business and really started to understand it. What about on the personnel side, or from that organizational type yeah. of structure? How do you see a lot of that with those younger companies that when you go in, you're like, okay, we definitely have to clean this up?
Sometimes. Not, you know, not all that much mm-hmm. because, you know, these are very, very smart people. And also playing with their own money.
Yep.
Investing their own money. It's typically not other people's money, or it's a significant amount of their money as the GP. But we do come into situations where there's a changing of the guard. Mm-hmm. So there's been a family sort of patriarch in place, and the way it's done from the last 35 years. And now you got, you know, two offspring who have just been waiting to rip yep. the Band-Aid off. And, you know, that's fun, but, you know, it's also, sort of highly upsetting to the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the sort of the biggest thing we see is this sort of generational change. The other thing from a leadership standpoint, especially in sort of smaller platforms, is the tendency to take on too much variety. So dabbling in X and Y and Z, different kinds of investment philosophies or investment styles, and not becoming really, really expert and deep at one. And generally, our larger clients are typically more like sector specialists. And sometimes it's really hard to have a little bit of retail, a little bit of single family rental, and a little bit of industrial. And if you think about like how to operate all that, mm-hmm. either outsource most of the management, and now you're trying to collect stuff from different things and it's not apples to apples, or if you try to self-manage it, you're spreading yourself way thin, because the types of discipline required and sort of overhead required can kind of eat up the cash flow produced off of that pretty quickly.
Let's go back. I want to talk about this generational component, about transferring from generations. You know, talked a little bit about the ideas, right? Because the younger gen is going to have different ideas or want to do things different ways. Are there other aspects that you see that some of the challenges you've seen too with that generational transfer, and whether you have or hasn't, what have you seen that's been successful to help with this transition? Is it starting well in advance? Is it to say, look, you really need to get ahead of this X period of time beforehand, right? And start that transition. And what's the best way that you've seen to go about that?
I think probably one of the more common things is just the strategy for growth. Like, do we want to just keep doing the same thing? We're doing well. I don't have to think about that business all that much all the time. But my two kids, who have been in probably groomed in other places, are interested in a larger platform. And that's a real dilemma. And many times the sort of the first or second generation is pretty comfortable with just solely like leveraging its own capital and not have a desire for, you know, playing with others nicely, or invite, you know, accessing third-party capital, layering on more risk, which means, you know, more third-party risk. So I think that's one of the biggest areas that is a dilemma. And then when you cross over that, it's like, yeah, we're gonna grow this platform. We need some outside capital or third-party capital. Like understanding what the expectations are, planning well in advance for that.
How far, when you say well in advance, how long do you think is ideal? Or,
well, one, it takes a long time to raise third-party capital.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So many times that's a, it's not like going down the street to a bank and applying for a mortgage loan. Mm-hmm. That can be a, it's a relationship process, and that can be a, you know, at least 12 to 18 months, sometimes 3 years.
Yep.
And I have seen many like sort of family office, you know, principals get very irritated with that. It's like, you know, I know a lot of people, I'm putting a lot of my capital here. Why can't we just figure out how to get a relationship quickly? And a lot of them, you know, get impatient with that. So, you know, laying the groundwork for this, really hardening your operating model, your sophistication of interacting with investors, that can take easily 12 to 24 months. And there's typically a lot of work involved in that. And many times that will require upgrading or enhancing the talent pool, sort of across the board, and understanding what positions you have and what their span of control is and how much more capacity can they take on.
Well, it's a different,
are they going to fit into that new environment?
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say, is that it's a different mentality in many regards, right? Because when you have your own capital, the one benefit of family capital is that it's patient capital.
You're serving yourself.
You're serving yourself. You make the decisions, you're in control, right?
Yeah.
And then when you start taking these institutions, you're having to report to them. You're having
I got
to
have an investment committee and
That's right. And you're having to, you know, at the whims of somebody else. And so that there's definitely
got to actually close the books.
That's right. Right. So it's really a culture thing when you think about it, right? There's definitely
a culture. There's a big mindset and sort of process.
That's right.
Evil that happens.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that I've seen it where you have a younger generation that just comes into the business and a younger generation that goes to a third party, what you brought up. I think it's the way to go is let them go off and sort of cut their teeth, you know, elsewhere, but also learn, because then you can come in with new ideas or new perspective or something like that. But if you are working for one of those larger institutions, you're bringing in a different mindset automatically, which is, you know, why many want to grow the portfolio and, right, and everything else. Right. And so
this is interesting. So we've seen this a number of times, and that same example of people being groomed outside, you know, a larger shop, you know, somebody with more sophistication or, you know, larger capital pool. And then you come to a smaller platform.
Yep.
Well, over there, I was a specialist, and I was doing this, and I was really, really good at it. But typically those are transaction oriented people, because you got a lot of A personalities. Yep. And then you come to run a business, mm-hmm, versus transact.
Yeah.
That's a very different thing. And we have seen folks that were coming from the outside with, you know, 5 minutes to spare for any conversation about operations. They just get frustrated.
Right.
And if you're not going to lean into your operating model and your operating platform, which really is the distinguishing characteristic, then get somebody who will,
yeah,
and will be your partner, because it's going to frustrate you to forever about how long things take and how long change takes to become in place. That's something we see quite a bit.
Well, it's you know, and I'm speaking from, you know, my kids and just the younger generation. You're used to a lot of things happening right away, right? Yeah. And not saying we have to take the long-term perspective. You know, I've also seen, and tell me if you ran across this, but, you know, somebody that's been there for a long time, 10, 15, 20 years, and all of a sudden the younger gen comes in and they sort of move above or has more say or control, obviously less experience, you know, that can cause some friction as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we see that all the time. And we're not really organizational psychologists or kind of, we don't do that kind of work, but the key to that is being explicit about what we're trying to accomplish, and selling the bigger picture. Like, you know, you're always going to have casualties when you're changing an organization's culture and mindset, and in some cases mission. But the one thing, and I think the differentiator that we see more of on a sideline basis, is those who can communicate that well and win hearts and minds, because it's not impossible, it's just hard, versus, you know, sort of the dictatorial, this is the way it is, you need to fall in line, don't ask me any more questions about it. And today's, you know, with today's workforce, they need a lot, they just do. They need, they want, they desire, they demand more communication, more feedback. And again, like, if the principal doesn't want to do that, bring somebody in who will do that and will help you be successful.
Okay, what about now? So you're growing the business, you're building this out. Maybe you are the younger generation that's coming in. You talked about, okay, we can hire somebody to replace that, which is, you know, that role, et cetera. What about the use of third parties for various, right? So what are some of the components that can be utilized, a firm like yours, let's say that you're like, well, geez, we don't have to worry about that inside. So now we can have that, these professionals that are already ramped up to help us go to the next level quicker or solve a problem maybe.
Right. Well, it's a little self-serving, but I like the question.
Well, but it's very important, right? And that's why I'm bringing it up is yes, it is self-serving, but the bottom line is I'm sitting here in that position of that family office or that family business, should we say, in the real estate sector. I don't really know who these third parties are or what they can value, they can really bring. So that I think it's really important. So please be self-serving. Well,
so the real estate business, it's really interesting because there's a lot of, we have this thing called the work map that describes the whole business. It's part of the operating model. And for a long time, like a lot of work that's done on behalf of a real estate investor has been outsourced. Sometimes capital raising, many, many times property management, a lot of cases development, legal is routinely outsourced because you need experts. It's kind of like me, I just had a plumber here to fix the hot water heater. I could have like looked at YouTube and maybe figured it out. I probably should have before. But it's
also part of the evolutionary process, right? Because you'll get to a point where you're like, you know what, we need in-house legal.
Yeah. So I paid $250 and they're gone in 10 minutes. Yeah. It was great. I didn't have the tools, knowledge, capability, whatever. So increasingly, we're seeing, you know, specialists, and we're one of a number of firms that are doing this, able to provide solutions that basically you can rent on a consulting or consultancy standpoint. You're just renting expertise. Like I called the plumber. It's like, I need some help. I don't do this every day. I want to call somebody that can tackle this specific problem, rent their capability, their experience, their ability to execute and solve a problem. Not a lot of us are around like that, but there are a few. And then on the sourcing front, it's getting interesting because now, right, as of March 1st, 2024, there's still a lot of hype about AI, ChatGPT, yeah, you know, being able to take on more and more work. And you know, it's probably going to cool off a little bit, but there is a lot of promise to that. But it's not going to displace the work of, you know, most of the work on a work map. So in response to that, you know, what we help people do is like figure out what their core differentiator is: transactions, raising capital, developing, whatever it is. And all of the other stuff, like figure out if there is a way to co-locate that with a group that can take the day-to-day, and we call it taking out the trash. So we do a lot of financial back office support work, technology support work, where we're set up to do that. We do it all the time, every day. People are happy to have careers. The other thing that's now happening, get back to AI, is some of the sourcing of said work is starting to happen with AI chatbots and robots.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to map out the work, the sourcing of that work, whether it's internal or some third party, and in many cases now, some kind of robot or AI functionality or a blend of that. And then supporting all that is, you know, your technology support, which depending on which asset class you're into, is getting further and further complicated to try to meet customer demands or meet investor demands.
So I want to go and dig a little bit deeper. So when you're saying on the financial component, can you give me an example and maybe elaborate on what that looks like when you're utilizing
support,
third party?
Yep. Yeah. So case in point, there's a company in the Rocky Mountains that has a, you know, large portfolio of class A, B apartments,
mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands of apartments. One of the interesting things after COVID is one of the hardest people to hire in real estate is a real estate property accountant.
Hmm.
So we're not making as many accountants. They're in high demand, and there's been a lot of turnover in accounting departments. It's, you know, it's not particularly a sexy profession. And we have been able to take on sort of components of AP, of revenue billing, of day-to-day property level bookkeeping, and then up the stack all the way through asset accounting, fixed assets, you know, dealing with payables and treasury. So it's a real, you know, you can decide how much you're in for, but there's real capability out there to rely on a third party to fully enable and leverage your resources.
Would that include too CFO?
No,
responsibilities.
No,
what about modeling?
Modeling potentially.
Yep.
Typically, we'll tell our clients is you still need the CFO, function, especially for capital markets, because we're and a controlling function. Because you need to have that tension and internal QA, because these are the client's books, not our books.
Yeah.
But you can go a long way. Now, we have a lot of situations where these are back to your long tenure point. Right. That there are a number of people who have grown up in the business and have been there for 20, 30 years. And in some cases, those are the targets of the younger generation to change.
Yep.
But there can be quite a bit of tension there for folks who believe it is, an honor, their honor and their purpose to keep those people in place.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfectly valid. But in many cases, it's harder and harder to keep some of the kind of back office folks happy. Because there's been so many job changes.
Yep.
This is an area that's an opportunity. Technology sort of the same way.
So when you were talking about some technology stuff, just to go into that with AI, elaborate a little bit more on how, a company like yours is able to help work through some of that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't think anybody's really solved it, and we certainly haven't.
Yeah.
But, we're keeping abreast of it. I will tell you, though, that even in our sort of lowly accounts payable sort of outsourcing process, we're working on things that can automate, using artificial intelligence, the straight through processing of a payable that comes in that's already been approved. It matches budget. There's no reason for a person to intervene at all. And whether you call it AI or robotics automation, and we have, on a daily basis, probably a dozen different robots, robot processors working on behalf of our clients. So that's an in use, in production thing that we have today.
Are you using any blockchain?
No.
At this juncture?
No.
Because that also seems like that can help streamline things and might be a solution in the future.
Hey, we would love whoever's got blockchain data lifecycle figured out in real estate, come talk to us. Because even though we have a data business that goes at that particular problem, it really shouldn't exist. And if blockchain worked, we wouldn't have that business. We would be doing probably more interesting work.
All right. So go through me really quickly. All of the areas I've got, my real estate company, what are all the areas with a firm like yours that I could outsource? So we've got back office accounting, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
So back office accounting, capital administration, capital sort of performance reporting, application. So on the technology side, technology or application provisioning. So we can provision your Yardi or whatever system. We can run that for you and get it set up for you. So you don't have to own the day-to-day pain of running and maintaining that, because Yardi resources are even more scarce than property accounting resources.
Yep.
Not that Yardi is the only thing out there, but a lot of our clients use Yardi. The ability to sort of manage and maintain and support the users of all those said technologies. You mentioned sort of debt and equity kind of modeling, forward modeling support. Mm-hmm. Reporting, investor reporting, and then aggregating and curating the data that's involved. Like if you're a family office, many times you're using multiple third-party property managers.
Yep.
They're giving you something on a monthly basis, and then you got to sift all that into reports. We can do that for you. And we can deliver that in a way that moves it up the capital chain for decisioning processes. And let's see, what else do we do? Oh, anything if you're commercial, so the lease abstraction and lease administration, that's also another area that people will come talk to us about. How can you help me just alleviate the pain and suffering that I have for trying to retain this type of worker? Can somebody just help me do that on an outsource basis? There are people that can do that.
So it's and then you have the consulting services, right? Whether it's dealing with the customer experiences or
oh, yeah.
You know, operational. Yeah,
that's more on a project basis.
Yeah, or strategy, yeah. Right?
Sure.
I'll tell you, it's and that's big for a number of reasons, and you sort of brought it up. I mean, all of this is instead of having to, you can speed up the whole process, right? When you do
accelerate
when you have right. that's a better word, when you have people that are experienced that can come in and really help turbo. It going forward. And, also you don't have to worry about the personnel that you have to pay taxes for. You don't have to worry about Social Security. You don't have to worry about any of those other issues that you're
dealing with. There's another thing, DJ, that we're often used for is the point of change kind of being driven by someone from the outside, where all of the angst of change can be focused on the outsider and not as much internal strife as sort of the change agent. And many times that's a very healthy thing. It kind of gets a little tiring for us to be filled up with bows and arrows and rocks.
Yeah.
But you can use a third party, a different perspective, and this is all we do. We don't do anything else. This is, we do this every day. We change companies every day.
Well, it's the other thing too. It's sort of like I'll use the babysitter analysis, where the parent can say, do this and do that. And they take it much different when there's somebody from the outside that comes in that's saying it, right? It's not right. Internally, it's on the external side.
And that can go way overboard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you use it appropriately, it can be good for sort of instigating change.
Well, I'll tell you, we've gone over a bunch of great information. I'll have to, I want to finish up on a story here because this is very important. The one thing I always talk about is how 70% of families lose their wealth by the second gen, 90% by the third generation. And I've actually seen this before where I had somebody come into my office one day. It was a family member. I think it was a second or third gen. And I go, well, how are you doing? And he goes, well, not so good. I lost 80% of my family's wealth. I said, 80% of the wealth? What was happening? Well, he was working on a real estate project that went awry, right? And this was supposed to be this big campus and stuff up in the Northeast. And you have the politics, you have all of this stuff. And I had to ask. I was like, okay, how much was that? And it was $800 million. I mean, this is real, and to get that money back is not going to, that's 80% of the money right there. So being surrounded by professionals and people that have been down that road is extremely important. And so there's huge benefits from that. And a lot of times, you think, let's just keep it internally. But I think it's really important to say, when can we leverage other people's expertise to help us get to the next level.
Well, you do it all the time in the real estate space. You always hire tax people.
Yeah.
Right? Because yep. You can't be your own tax person because change is too much. You always hire legal teams.
Yep.
For that kind of expertise. But you know, sometimes this is like, well, how hard could it be? We just buy some technology and like everything falls in line. The processes are magically better and we're running better.
Well
that's the dream.
Right.
Doesn't happen like that all the time.
Well, you know, and I've got to say, real estate in particular, I mean, even if you go down to the fundamental from an investment perspective, people think, well, I don't want to pay fees or, you know, it's they're just putting the money into a building and it's just appreciating and making money. Well, do you realize the day to day that has to be dealt with and all the things that can go wrong and all the different components and all the specialty in the various aspects? And there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more to it.
And we know that, and we've worked with a number of kind of family offices that have made a lot of investments in the rental sector.
Yep.
Which is great because we need more rental housing. We need more affordable housing. But talk about an area of real estate that's changing. It's like, it's not about really the assets anymore. It's about the consumer.
Yep.
And it's becoming a hospitality-like business. And whether you're trying to do it yourself or hire the right third-party property managers with the right capability, the amount of innovation and platform investment and technology investment focused on sort of the consumer journey is mind-blowing. Yep. And, you know, that just takes expertise, it takes experience, it takes practice, it takes some tools. And that's all pretty hard to self-service on YouTube.
Yeah, it's
there's that's the reason I called the plumber earlier.
That's right. There's definitely more, and especially when you know when you've got your own money at risk, you want to make sure that keeps in place. And if you do work with an institution or a third party capital, well, now you got a responsibility of other people outside your own
the fiduciary, money. Right?
That's right. That's right. So listen, David Stanford, Real Foundations, this has been great and love to have you back on another episode and everything else. And the biggest thing I hope people take away is that, yes, there's more complexity to this. You can speed up that process for the infrastructure, for the business, regardless of what size you're at. Mm-hmm. And utilize third-party experts, you know, like you guys. So thanks so much for being on the show. And, we'll definitely circle back and continue the conversation.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.